of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, Monday night, I was in Atlanta for the national championship game where Ohio State beat Notre Dame. And I very quickly, during the game, started to think about who could get there next year and what is this game worth recruiting-wise and how far away is Oregon from being in a national title game? Can they fill the holes that they have? They're losing some defensive backs. Is Dante Moore going to be the quarterback? What about Washington? And then I started thinking about Oregon State and Washington State. And there's nobody better to talk about all this stuff than Brandon Huffman, our next guest. He is the national recruiting editor at 24/7 Sports. Man of the world joining us now. Brandon, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. I was actually just in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl, and I saw, you know, another former Pac-12 team that could make some waves next year, yeah. Arizona State. So, yes, I had an easier time getting out, though, than it sounds like everybody else did.
Yeah, it was the airport was not prepared, and I'm not going to be one of those whiny sports writers that talks about this stuff, but, man, they were just not prepared. I felt bad for the fans who had traveled there. It was a bad scene. Give me an idea. Let's talk Arizona State for a second before I get to the Pacific Northwest teams. But they've got to replace Cam Scataboo. But can Kenny Dillingham get in some living rooms, recruit some guys that he didn't have access to before because of what they did this last year?
100%. And I think as people see what kind of fiery coach he is, but such a player's coach. I mean, this is a guy that when a player of his goes into the portal, he quote tweets it and says, this is going to be a great asset to whatever program he ends up. He is going to be kind of that next wave of coaches, much like Dan Lanning, who he worked with, that's going to be a real player's coach, but then also has the X's and O's acumen that as he just gets a little bit more seasoning, could really be the face of college football over the next decade.
Scataboo's going to be tough to replace because he was such, like, the culture of the team, the identity of the team was the way he ran. I don't know that there's another player in the country that epitomized his team that way, but I'd love to see Dillingham have that success. Do coaches have to be careful, though, Brandon, where, you know, I've seen this happen before where all of a sudden you can recruit somebody who's on a higher level, but you lose kind of your culture or your identity. Do you have to be careful when you're making that leap?
You do. And I think that, you know, we've seen schools that do that, that they start to get a little bit ahead of their skis and maybe go after players that weren't part of the culture. And they start going after guys that don't necessarily fit into a locker room. And then you have a divide. We saw that at Florida. I mean, granted, it was 10, 15 years ago in a pre-NIL era, but you had the kind of the guys that were that first wave of the Florida Gators that Urban Meyer got there. Then he brought in that ill-fated 2010 class. And the old school guys that had been a part of those Tim Tebow teams, they didn't like the youngsters. And it caused Urban Meyer to have incredible health problems that benefited Ohio State. But
right.
you can have that problem if you get away from the culture and you start getting ahead of what got you to that point.
Brandon Huffman with us, national recruiting editor, 24/7 Sports. Oregon's got some holes to fill. I was watching the national title game and thinking, gosh, Dante Moore, they must love that guy because they haven't, you know, really chased someone in the portal like Dillon Gabriel or Bo Nix. What's happening at Oregon? What do you see happening recruiting-wise?
I mean, recruiting-wise, they're on another level right now. I mean, they've got this identity that they are the cool guy in the classroom, and all the kids around the country want to be with the cool guy. They want to hang out with the cool guy. And I mean, you look at what they've done on the defensive line. They've already got, in the 2026 class, they've already got five defensive linemen committed, and they're all five from the West Coast, and they're not just good players that Oregon got, but they're good players that the other schools that are recruiting them didn't get. And it's such a position, such a premium position, where Dan Lanning has really made his money in trying to make Oregon so SEC-like, was in the trenches, on the offensive line and the defensive line. He's getting players that national programs are coveting and kind of stockpiling it. And I think that's something that is really showing that Oregon is not messing around. They'll do, you know, they'll close as well as anybody. I mean, it was kind of interesting this year the way they lost Dallas Wilson after he signed, and then Jaron Kiavis-Tongapolotilli going into the portal. That's not been normally what's happened to Oregon. But I think it also shows that there's enough talent that they can withstand those losses and not really impact them greatly.
It kind of tells me they must really like Dante Moore. Is that mm-hmm. a conclusion I should be drawing, that they've seen something in practice that tells them they've got their quarterback for next year.
No, no question. And I think that, you know, there were flashes his true freshman year at UCLA of what Dante Moore was capable of. And then I think the system and the fit and kind of what Dorian Thompson-Robinson meant in Chip Kelly's offense compared to what Dante Moore meant, it was trying to scram a square peg into a round hole, and it didn't fit. But I think the talent has always been there for Dante Moore. And I think him having this, you know, essentially – it wasn't a redshirt year, but the pressure wasn't on him to be the guy. It kind of allowed him to step back, and I think he's more than ready to be, because he's a more talented passer and a really a better athlete than Dylan Gabriel. And I think that he's going to take that offense to another level. And I think that given the fact that they didn't go after any quarterbacks in the portal, I mean, yes, there are all the rumors about Quinn Ewers that I've heard. Those were, you know, embellished by a lot of other fan bases. There was never any real interest in going after a portal quarterback at Oregon because they were so high on what Dante Moore could be.
Brandon, you know, it's going to be hard for everybody when you have holes to fill those holes, but I watched Ohio State and Notre Dame. What do they get in playing in that national title game? Or does it still always come down to who's going to pay and how much money you'll have and revenue sharing? But does getting to the title game for Notre Dame do something for them? Does winning it all do something for Ohio State with recruits?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's hard to say because the way recruiting is now is it changed. It's not about where can I go win a national championship, where can I go get developed. I mean, guys are opting out of the playoffs in when they have a chance to win a national championship. So it's not about the national title anymore. It's not about development. It's where can I go play and get paid on the front end. That's seemingly more often the case. You know, you look at Michigan and Washington, who played the national title game a year ago. They both lose their coaches a week or two after the game, and they both have kind of rebuilding years. But the recruiting classes that they have in 2025, even with coaching changes, those recruits knew that 9 months ago, 10 months before, Washington played the national title game, Michigan played. So I think Notre Dame and Ohio State both recruited such a high level. This, to me, it's not going to help Ohio State any more than it already has. They're already a top four program. But I think this legitimizes what Marcus Freeman is doing at Notre Dame. And if they can just keep his name out of the NFL coaching headlines for a year or two, people will see that he wants to be there for the long term. And I think that that just makes Notre Dame's ceiling that much higher as a program as he continues to get his guys. Because if you look at Ohio State, yes, they had a couple of transfers that were key, but that was much like Michigan and Washington a year ago. That was still a pretty high school heavy recruited program. Yes, they spent a lot of money to keep those guys and to bring in a Will Howard and a Caleb Downs, but the core of those two teams were homegrown talent. And I think that that's what's still going to be the separator in winning national titles.
Brandon, in your backyard, Washington, Jed Fish trying to get that thing going. Obviously, last year, I think they struggled a little bit at the line of scrimmage. I really like their young quarterback. How good can Washington be next year, and what have you seen them do to kind of fill some of their deficiencies?
Well, I think that they made it a priority to go after offensive linemen in the portal, and obviously in the defensive line, they're trying to strengthen that in the portal. The reality is, those are two positions that everybody in the country walk. It reminds me of, you know, the old days of signing day. You'd see a coach on Twitter say, hey, if there's any 6'5", 240-pound defensive ends that run a 4.7, hit me up. It's like, yeah, well, there's going to be 300 coaches following you because they're looking for the same thing. So that's where it's got to be about developing those guys. And I think that Arizona did a really good job when Jed Fish, by year three, of developing some guys that they took a flyer on. And, you know, you look at the strength of Jed Fish's time at Arizona, it was largely built on that first full recruiting class that he signed in 2022 with T-Mac, with Noah Fafita, with Jacob Manu, and then several of those players go to Washington. Well, you look at the first full class that Jed Fish signs at Washington, there's a lot of guys that may get thrown into the fire, but with a dynamic quarterback like Damon Williams, you know, if he can get a little bit of time to throw, you know, there's no telling what kind of ceiling that offense could have. And I think that Fish is the perfect kind of complement to what Damon Williams can do in his play calling ability.
Is it still, I mean, when you talk about the most coveted players, everybody thinks quarterback, but what other positions are we talking about? Is it defensive tackles after that? And what comes after that? Kind of give us the hierarchy of what you hear coaches talking about on their wish list.
No, for sure. In fact, I had this conversation with an NIL agent about 2 weeks ago when I was in San Antonio for the All-American Bowl, and essentially it's going quarterbacks, left tackles, and defensive ends, which is not unlike the NFL draft where there's a premium placed on elite quarterbacks, elite left tackles, and elite pass rushers. And receivers are up in that mix too, but you're having to need three or four receivers on your team, so you got to be careful that you spend. But one impact left tackle keeps your quarterback upright. Two impact tackles keep your offensive line intact and your running game going. And so I think that the premium is now, the old days, quarterbacks would commit early. There was never a bargaining conversation with quarterbacks. Economically, they were usually the most sound. Well, now quarterbacks are going to cost you more than anything, but much like the NFL, left tackles and defensive ends are also going to cost you a lot. And if you look at the teams that are winning, look at Ohio State. I mean, they go in to get an offensive tackle and Josh Simmons from San Diego State out of the portal. They go get Seth McLaughlin, who's a center, but they knew that they still needed to shore up that offensive line, and then lose both those guys, ironically, to injury, and their offensive line almost plays better. But that's the value on those positions. It goes quarterback, tackle, DN, with receivers kind of creeping up there if you're a Jeremiah Smith player, but we only see one Jeremiah Smith player in college football.
Brandon Huffman is the national recruiting editor at 24/7 Sports with us here. Washington State has hired Jimmy Rogers from South Dakota State. He's going to bring some FCS guys with him. I get the angle there. What do you see when that happens? And can Washington State attract guys, or does it always come back to, again, NIL and the ability to pay some guys?
I mean, that's still going to be what gets you the really, really good Jimmys and Joes, but there's still going to be a lot of players that are just going to be happy with the opportunity to play at the next level. And I think if you look at programs like a Boise State, I mean, they use, 90% of their cap allotment or their NIL allotment for Ashton Gentry to come back when other schools were coming after him. But there were other guys that they didn't get heavily recruited, and they chose Boise State for a reason, for the culture that was built there. And I think that that's going to be what Washington State's really going to have to hammer with Rogers, is we've got a chance to build culture here and to develop and to win. And they also have to go in with the understanding that you may have more John Mateer and Wayshon Parker type situations than most FBS programs. And, I think about something Jason Eck said this summer when he was at Idaho before he went to New Mexico. When they were recruiting players, they were essentially saying, listen, if you do what we think you're capable of, you're not going to be at Idaho much longer than 2 years. And maybe you come back for a third year, but then you position yourself to go somewhere bigger. And I think that that's what a lot of coaches that aren't at the Power Four schools, and even at the Power Four schools that don't have endless amounts of NIL, they need to understand that, hey, if we can get you here for these 2 or 3 years, that could change you, but then you just hope that the culture keeps them there.
Oregon State spent $1.5 million on Malik Murphy, another $250,000 times two on two tight ends. They're into three players, Brandon, for $2 million, and Oregon State's spending, which raises eyebrows because I'm not used to seeing Oregon State spend. Let's first talk about Malik Murphy. How good is that kid? I'm at the CFP championship game, and some of the East Coast writers are going, yeah, but he was leaving Duke. But I'm like, he still had good numbers. How good is Malik Murphy, and what kind of get was that for Oregon State?
I mean, he was a tremendous get, and I think that all you need to know, and if you look at this guy's track record with quarterbacks, is Sark wanted him over Cade Klubnik, and they ended up having Quinn Ewers transfer in the same year when he was kind of reclassified. But when Sark got to Texas, he honed in on Malik Murphy, and Malik Murphy was second there at Texas ahead of Arch Manning, who granted was a true freshman, but the talent is there. And this is the third time the charm for Ryan Gunderson, who recruited him as soon as he got to UCLA. He tried to get Malik Murphy, but he ultimately went to Texas. When he went into the portal out of Texas, he tried to get him to Oregon State. He went to Duke. Well, now the third time's the charm, and there's clearly a trust there. And I think that again, when you're not at a Power Four school, you just got to win those games that are on your schedule. You may get, all the national media up in arms against you like you're a Boise State, but you just keep your mouth shut. You go out, you win games. You could find yourself in that 12-team playoff, and I think that's what Oregon State was a quarterback away this year from not being a 5-7 team, but potentially being a 10-2, 11-1 team, and maybe their season under Trent Bray in his first year goes vastly different.
Yeah, I'm looking at their schedule, and you know, they open with Cal. They have Fresno State. It's Oregon, which is a really tough game at Oregon, and Texas Tech. And then, Brandon, the rest of that schedule is very manageable. If they can go 3-1 in those first four games, or even 2-2 in those first four games, I think they're looking at 9 or 10 or 11 wins, possibly.
You think about it, that stretch that they had when things kind of went awry, I mean, the Nevada game kind of derailed the season, but they should have beat UNLV. They had a lead on UNLV, and there was three or four games that the entire complexion of the season changes with just adequate quarterback play. And, you know, mediocre quarterback play probably puts them in a bowl game. So now you go from mediocre quarterback play to an established starter in a Power Four school who won nine games, who started a couple of games for a playoff team the year before. And now he's going to understand, too, that, like, hey, this is kind of his big money season. He's got to have one more big year to make that leap to the NFL. So could get potentially perfect marriage. And, you know, the schedule, like you said, it aligns where Boise State got in with their only loss being at Oregon. If Oregon State's only loss is at Oregon, they still have a very, very good case to be a playoff team. And I think that Malik Murphy is the difference between throwing out a potential playoff berth or, you know, just getting to a bowl game.
Brandon Huffman, 24/7 Sports. He's fantastic on recruiting. Brandon, Oregon State, you know, I'm asking Oregon State how much the collective is spending. I'm hearing, you know, you got to spend $5 million to potentially want to be a top 25 team. That's the minimum threshold. I'm being told Oregon State is spending well above that. It may be $7, $8 million that they spend on this roster. Do you have a sense? You know, some of these schools are going to spend $20.5 million with revenue sharing plus their NIL collectives. Do you have a sense of what it costs to be a playoff team, what it costs to be a top 25 team?
I think you're looking at well north of $30 million. I think when you see that Ohio State went with a $20 million lineup this year, and that was before revenue sharing went into effect, I think you're going to have to be north of $30 to $40 million. And remember, you know, the wink, wink, nudge, nudge of the whole house settlement is that anything that's outside of the revenue sharing has to be open, and it's got to be, you know, through this clearinghouse that's going to do. Well, then we're going to bring back the bagman. We're going to bring back the deals that, you know, put these across the end zone and get these deals done. And so, you know, you're going to have your on the record, what it's going to take you. Then you're going to have your off the record numbers that are going to be what's going to take you to be a national championship team. But, and I think that that's what we saw this year in the playoffs is that, is it worth it? Absolutely. Do you think an Ohio State fan is going to sit there and be upset when fans mock them for saying you spent $20 million on their roster? No, because they're going to go spend $20 million on gear celebrating this national championship because that is what this whole sport is trending towards. It's about winning and by any means necessary.
All right. So a lot of media talk about how they would change college football or fix about the portal or the windows, the recruiting windows. Nobody asked the recruiting expert, and I think your perspective is really valuable, Brandon. So you tell me, what do you see in that recruiting world that needs fixing?
I think that there needs to be either an earlier signing period, which I'm not entirely a fan of, but with the ability for players to transfer as quickly as they are, then maybe you do a preseason in August signing period. Remember, in basketball recruits will sign in November in their senior year, usually before their high school basketball season starts. So if there is an injury, if there is a regression in play, the school's still on the hook. And now, more than ever, the school's on the hook for it. So perhaps if they go to a high school signing class, I mean, the sad part is the old days of your senior year evaluation being so crucial, it doesn't matter anymore. The school wants 90%, 95% of the recruiting class done by the time they go to fall camp at the beginning of August. So they don't really care what your senior year looks like anymore. If they don't like you, they'll tell you in December of your freshman year to go ahead and look elsewhere. So I think if you move that up, and then if you could, there's some way, and this is the hardest part, is how do you tinker the window without it impacting the scheduling of school and classes? Because at the end of the day, remember, John, is that they're student athletes. Remember, that's what we're being led to believe, that they're student athletes. So they need to be there that first week of school. They need to be there that first week of semester classes and quarter classes. So by pushing either the football schedule up so they're playing the national championship earlier, or the window opens, you know, in the middle of December, I don't know how they can get around it with the way that classes are going.
You know, so problematic when you remember that they're supposed to be going to class and need to be enrolled. All right, Brandon, you're the best, man. I appreciate you. And what's next for you on the travel schedule? You're probably on to the next recruiting event, or what happens next?
Yeah, I got 2 7-on-7 tournaments in the Northwest. I just spent last week suffering for the subscribers at the Polynesian Bowl. It was really tough to get on an airplane when it was 80 degrees and to land in Seattle at 24. But now it'll be 7-on-7 tournaments and camps and showcases for like the next 6 months. And, you know, Oregon's hosting a junior day this weekend. You've got other schools that are hosting junior days. And then we go dead period all February, and coaches kind of get a little bit of a break.
I love it. Keep them busy. Brandon Huffman, you're the best. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks a lot, John. Appreciate it.
There he is. He had to go to the Polynesian Bowl. I like that. I like the way he framed that. Good stuff from him. Obviously, Oregon thinks it's got its guy in Dante Moore. I love to hear that from Brandon Huffman. Good perspective on what Washington's doing. This thing's off its rails. It needs fixing. I think the recruiting guys need a voice in this, because I think that's where it all starts. And I don't want to see an era that returns to the bagmen. I'd love to see transparency with NIL and transparency with revenue sharing. And, oh, by the way, shouldn't this revenue sharing be more equally dispersed so that it's not so out of whack? I think some people are getting turned off out there watching college football. They're like, I'm just, it feels too much like, you know, rooting against U.S. Steel. When you watch Ohio State win and you watch Notre Dame in the title game and you look at the playoff. But I'll tell you one thing. I think Oregon State watched what happened with Boise State and the love they got, watched what happened with Arizona State and the momentum and love they got, saw what happened with SMU, and I think Oregon State is kind of going for it next year. I think they want to stay relevant, be relevant. They're obviously spending. I think they're going to spend more north of $7 million on this roster. They have $2 million tied up in three players, quarterback and two tight ends. I think Oregon State, with that schedule, and if you disagree with me, look at their schedule, pull it up on your phone. It's a tough opening month with Cal, Fresno State, Oregon, Texas Tech. And the rest of the way, the last eight games of that season, I kind of think if they're healthy, they win eight straight to finish the year. But that first four, can they go 3-1? Can they go 2-2? Because if they can, that will be money well spent, as Oregon State, I think, will be relevant and in the conversation for being a potential playoff team. But if they don't, it's just going to be $7 million not well spent, what, to go to a mid-level bowl game. We'll talk about that and Oregon's prognosis coming up.